Thank you, Dr. Horgan. Our next speaker is Frank Hoffman. Mr. Hoffman is currently a research fellow at the Center for Emerging Threats and Opportunities at Quantico. He serves as the Center's Global Affairs Analyst, and is responsible for advanced concepts and directs a research program into the character of future conflict. Mr. Hoffman's professional experience includes 30 years of public service as a Marine Infantry officer and a national security consultant. He has served on the Commission on National Security in the 21st Century and the Commission on Roles and Missions of the Armed Forces. He is a non-resident senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, an active member of the International Institute for Strategic Studies, and he holds degrees from Wharton Business School, George Mason University, and the U.S. Naval War College. He's the author of a book, Decisive Forces of War, and has published over 100 articles and book chapters on national security strategy. Mr. Hoffman?
Thank you very much. I'm going to speak here and try to make this more of a conversation if we can today. I'd like to pick up at this point with the comment that Paul made that the time is right. The time's just a little bit too late in the game when we look at the long war, and it's also a little bit too late for me personally. I'll give you a little example of the tension that still exists between the academy and the department. I have a daughter who's a student in anthropology at a Virginia state-based university, and with a wonderful resume that she's accomplished for herself, she managed to get an internship in the Department of Defense in the Public Diplomacy Initiative for this summer. A very well-paying internship that would have alleviated some of the bills I've got to write and send down to Williamsburg. And her department head convinced her that touching the Department of Defense would be fatal for her career in her field. So she spent the summer as a telephone receptionist at a hotel this summer. And I'm probably going to write some larger checks this year. And I don't understand how her department head thinks that her field or my personal interest in wallet was best served by that. So a little bit too late for me. I wanted to come up and I wanted to thank Tom and Nadia for the invitation here today. And I wanted to help and come up with a great sexy title for your conference. I was looking at Mars Marries Minerva. I thought that might be sexy. And then, of course, then we'd have to divorce the Department of Defense from its science focus first, because right now Mars, the department, is married to Vulcan, the science of God. So I thought maybe a conference about trois menages might be a little bit too much. So I think we'll just have to settle with Mars Marries Minerva. I'm probably the wrong guy for this particular panel. I think I was confused with the other Hoffman in town, who's a wonderful professor at Georgetown, a dear friend of mine. He's very scholarly, he's empirically based, and he's highly respected. You're going to get the roguishly handsome one instead, I think, as a substitute. But that's not all bad, probably, either. I'm mostly a user of applied research and some baseline research, so I'm going to give you some insights from my perspective. I've spent the last decade overseas and in consulting here in Washington, D.C. on small wars, counterterrorism, counterinsurgency, and homeland security. I spent a lot of time in the late 90s, worked with people like Frank Salufo, who helped me understand some of the problems in that area a long time ago. So it's kind of my focus area. And I'm kind of, I don't like using the word terrorism. I'm just into violent groups, violent non-state actors, and try to stay away from the baggage associated with the T word. So all violent groups are part of my baggage, and I like to pull that. I'm wearing a couple hats today. I do work for the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies. We have a research area in counterterrorism. I've had that for some time. Professor and Dr. Yon Alexander has been made that his life's work. It's one of those little seed places, little centers of excellence that's in this field. It's also reflective of the problem of trying to get resources to maintain those lines. At the Potomac Institute, we focus largely on science and technology policy and advising the government and in Congress, but in that particular area, we kind of work the human dimension of the problem as well, too. My hat with the Foreign Policy Research Institute in Philadelphia. We do a lot of regional studies up there. Mike Radu is our counterterrorism director, and we do a lot of detailed work on counterterrorism strategies on an international dimension. But down at Quantico, where I spend my day work, Monday through Friday at least, we have an intense interest in this particular area, and we have a number of research problems that we work on. My job down there is to try to help develop the doctrines, the educational programs, and the training programs that prepare Marines for combat in the 21st century, and we're looking at a very diverse set of actors in the future who apply a variety of different means that we need to be able to thwart, and that's a big challenge for us. I'm not the least bit surprised that an institution that spends so much interest in the human dimension, that I see Marine uniforms here and only Marine uniforms, and that we have our faculty present, particularly those that are coming from a social sciences background. I think that's kind of reflective of the Marine Corps' interest. I've cut my speech down here to try to focus on a few things today, but I did want to point out one of the giants of Cold War strategy, Bernard Brody, once made the point that good strategy always presumes good anthropology and good sociology. And it's an enduring truism, whether we're talking about states like the Soviet Union, where we had an anthropological and sociological base, and also terrorism organizations and other violent groups. Fundamentally, conflict is an interactive competition between peoples. And it's always going to involve patterns of behavior and the result of a whole complex combination of factors, as Dr. Horgan's talked about. In the past, our national security community always had experts in a couple of states, and we rigorously studied the strategic culture and the military culture and organizations of our adversary. We understood his capabilities, his proclivities, and his predispositions pretty well. Had a whole cadre of experts. Many people that run the department now are part of that cadre of Russian and Soviet expertise. We came to understand, or at least we thought we did, the nuances of their communications, the code words of their language. We understood the allusions in their myths and their communiques, and we even analyzed pictures, and we thought if somebody was standing someplace that it meant something in the power structure. And we have nowhere near that kind of base for anything else. For everybody else, we've been relatively intellectually lazy for a long period of time, and that's why we're too late. We become what General Zinni used to call order of battle oriented, where we just focused on things that we could quantify and line up in nice little templates. And we're really struggling with the templates and the doctrine now for terrorist organizations. We're going to face a future of fault wars and cultural wars. I think Sam Huntington's gotten a lot right, and I think that's going to put a serious premium on the kind of information that this Minerva project, I think, is really going to base out. And there's nothing new here. Michael Howard himself stressed this many years ago. Wars and conflict are not tactical exercises writ large. They're conflicts of societies and between societies, and they can only be fully understood if one understands the nature of the society, and that's also the organizations that are fighting them. The roots of victory and defeat often are sought far from the battlefield in political, social, and economic factors. And that's just as true for our competition in the Cold War as it's going to be in the 21st century with non-state actors. So if we can come to grips with the nature, the ideology, and the structure of modern terrorism and violent non-state actors, we'll have done something good. And rather than give pause to the complexity of this factor of 20, 30 groups, maybe in 20, 30 countries, rather than give us pause, I suggest that this indicates a greater deal of urgency, if I might say, maybe even more funding for this kind of initiative, if we can implement it successfully. And if I can quote Bruce Hoffman, who should probably be on the stage, from his masterful book, "If we are to succeed, our efforts must be as tireless, innovative, and dynamic as those of our opponents." And I think the Minerva Initiative, I think, is really going to give us that innovation and that dynamism that we currently lack. If I could just summarize three areas of, as a user, where I'd like to see some research, and I hope the department funds some areas. Doing okay? Particularly the area of the understanding of adversary motivations and ideology is very, very important. We need to really get down below. We're just scratching the surface right now, and agree with Dr. Horgan on that part. We need the translations. But we also need the cultural understanding of what these translations mean, particularly for terrorism groups. Some of these will be done in plays, some of them done in poetry, work that I've done in Somalia, you know, that doesn't always come in speeches or in white papers. You really have to get down into a level of detail in society to be very useful. It's not all in source documents, and we need to get down to a level where we really understand the gut meaning of things, not just the literal translation. And so a lot of the literature, understanding terrorist literature, understanding what they're really saying when they say things is a difficult challenge, and that's what we really need these research groups to focus on. My second area of research of late dealt with the other group that preceded us on the topic of religion, and here the issues of mirror imaging really do come out. I'll give you a little story about the writing of the COIN manual, which Dr. Noggle, who was here earlier, and I were involved with as writers on that particular project. The first draft, I think Dr. Mankin was there, the first draft that we were presented with had Mao listed 17 times in the first chapter. And yet in a 300-page document, the word religion, Islam, or Muslim did not appear once in 300 pages. We rectified some of that, but I still think we have a problem coming to grips as a society with understanding religion and how it motivates people. So it ties back into, again, to the ideology and the motivation of some of these groups. We see religion in some of these organizations. It profoundly motivates or changes their behavior. We've seen some research, Mr. Marshall has funded some research that I've been privy to, that's the only place I could find data to try to understand this phenomenon and try to bring it into our current doctrine and influence things. I don't think we've still done enough. I published a critique of the COIN manual. I still think that we don't understand the motivation factor of religion and how it influences our stuff. If you look at the COIN manual and you look at the folks who developed counterinsurgency theory in this country, they're all economists. And I'm not knocking economists. My father was an economist and I have a degree in economics. We're dismal people and it's a dismal science, but it might not be the kind of motivating foundation for understanding counterinsurgency. I think much of our theory is still based upon mirroring ourselves and based upon Western economic rationalism and not about dealing with folks who are motivated by religion. So there's a lot of work to be done in that area. There is a lot of work done now on the issue of structure in organizations. I think we really do need the inputs of folks, not just Dr. Sageman and Dr. Hoffman's work and the little debate that they stirred up. That's an insight that there is a debate that can go on, and it also highlights the value of having different disciplinary folks come together on a particular problem. So I really salute the multidisciplinary approach, although we might have a different conversation if we had Dr. Hoffman and Dr. Sageman here on the stage at the same time today. But that's two different perspectives of different social sciences coming together with different methodologies, different empirical approaches coming together and coming to different conclusions. We need that kind of debate. It can be very, very healthy and very, very valuable, I think, to the department. And we've not had that debate yet enough inside the department. If I could just wrap up a little bit, in all these three issues of structure, motivation, ideology, I think the issue is trying to come to grips with understanding these organizations. We understood the Soviet Union. We think we understood Russia. We think that concepts like dissuasion, deterrence, and escalation control were pretty soundly based upon, you know, that kind of cultural understanding. We have nowhere near that kind of cultural understanding for the 10, 20, or 30, you know, state-sponsored and non-state-sponsored violent groups that we're going to see in the 21st century. We have no idea what their value chains are. We have no idea what their risk thresholds are. We still try to apply some of these concepts, but the fundamental core research base to support these kind of contentions is nowhere there. And with that, I'll just wrap up. Thank you very much.